Okay, good morning. So we've been trying to understand a little bit the issues related to Heseba. And yesterday we tried to lay out to some degree what we want to try to understand. And what did we see? We saw that this is probably an obligation midrabanan. There was some room to maybe see it as daraisa. If we will follow the Rambam's language that we're talking about, the idea of putting ourselves back in that moment of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and he immediately continues from saying that we are obligated laharos es atzmo, to display ourselves as if we were leaving Mitzrayim at that moment. He goes right from there into the language of Heseba, which could allow us some room to think maybe it's a fulfillment of that obligation min haTorah. We saw that the indications were probably not that way. It sounds like it really is an obligation midrabanan. It was also the angle which we'll have to pursue a little bit more, that the Medrash has in the beginning of Parshas Beshalach that we were taken out of Mitzrayim in a reclining position, that the language of Vayosev, and that the Medrash connects that to Heseba, and how much that's a part of it is also something we're going to try to understand. And this led us to try to consider a few other questions, such as, is this an obligation in each and every mitzvah that it's relevant to, or is it its own general obligation? And also, what exactly is our point? Is our point to try to impress others, to try to convey a message of cheres to others, or is it about trying to evoke a attitude within ourselves? And if that's the case, then maybe it's going to have to correlate more to the realities of our circumstance. It's going to have to actually evoke a sense of cheres from us. And that change the Rambam has, the language of laharos, when the Haggadah has the language of liros, we have to see ourselves as if we left from Mitzrayim. And the Rambam has more of a language of displaying it outwardly. Laharos, that might be very significant for this purpose. So that's just a quick recap from yesterday. Everybody good so far? So let's try to explore that a little bit more. So first of all, this question of how much does it have to correspond to what we actually feel. So this is an issue which affects us Bizman Hazeh particularly. Right? And you saw the Ramah, right? The Ramah quotes the view of the Ravyah. What's the Ravyah's position? That maybe nowadays it's not really so relevant. That once upon a time, this used to correlate with a feeling of cheres for us, but nowadays it's not the way we function. And in fact, if somebody's going to lie down in the middle of the meal, he's going to look sick. And even though we don't find that to be the mainstream position, we'll see, practically speaking, it is sometimes invoked as at least a tzad, as at least an element when Heseba is complicated for other reasons. But again, it's not the mainstream practice, and the Bach has a tshuva about this also, where he says, yeah, he struggles with it, and yeah, it's true, this doesn't seem to follow the way we behave nowadays, but still, it has an impact of conveying cheres. So that itself goes to this question. How concerned are we that it should actually bring about a sense of cheres for us when we're doing it? Or is that less the point? The point is there's a picture here, and that picture is the message. And whether or not it actually brings that feeling within ourselves is less to the point. Now, it's still going to affect the picture also, which is something that the Rav Yo also mentioned, because if people looking at you also don't relate to it, so then that's also something that's going to have an impact. But then there's still this aspect, maybe, of the Medrash and Beshalach, and that it's not even just about whether it sends a message of cheres, but also it evokes the whole picture of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But that's a lesser component, because we see cheres emphasized again and again. So we would imagine that's got to be an element at some part of the puzzle, either we feel cheres, or there, at least we're conveying a message of cheres. That's something that's going to have to enter into the picture somewhere. Hi.
Yeah, What would be the point of just merely conveying the picture? What is the purpose of that?
So if this is a part of Pirsum Hanes, which we also have to try to understand exactly why that's important. That's itself a whole discussion. But that if everything we're trying to do Pesach night is about telling a story, so then it might be that it's worthwhile to tell the story, even if it doesn't necessarily do anything for us.
Isn't even telling the story, isn't that for us?
Not necessarily. I mean, it could be that we are in the role of teller, which we'll see also as we get into issues of Haggadah and Manishtana, the idea that there's a dialogue that's built in to the Seder uniquely, right? That interacting and being a teacher and a student is so crucial to the whole picture. It's not necessarily the case. You know, there is a role of communicator and a role of communicatee, which is built into the Seder structure. So this difference between the Haggadah and the Rambam might be relevant to the whole Seder experience. You know, this Haseba is one application of it, but it might be a question that's relevant to ask for everything we're going to do Seder nights. So is the emphasis on Liros Es Atzmo, that we need to feel in the moment, or that we're telling the story, and the story, therefore, we're acting it out, and we need Laharos Es Atzmo, in the Rambam's language. We need to make ourselves look this way, even if we're not feeling it. Or, as is often the case, is it some element of both? And we mentioned yesterday that this also seems to be, as some understand, the message of Tosfos in the beginning of our parak, where we're coming from before this, Sadi Testament Beis, where Tosfos asks, what's the whole Chiddush, the Mishnah saying that even a poor person has to do his seva? Of course he does, why not? And Tosfos says, because maybe he doesn't have a comfortable way to lean, and the Mordechai adds a little more to that, doesn't have cushions, doesn't have a couch. So what emerges from Tosfos is that even if this is a awkward position for you, you don't have a comfortable time sitting that way, it still has value. So what we do with that, whether that's because of the whole other element of Zeichel Neis that's independent, or whether it's because even just the Cheres component is more about a display rather than an internal emotion, that's something which is going to be a theme here. Now, it's also interesting that the Shulchan Aruch, we saw this in the list as at the end of the list, the Shulchan Aruch gives us another example of what we would do with Cheres. Now, what other example do you find in the Shulchan Aruch? At least one example of where Cheres plays another role. Right, Shulchan Aruch says we should have nice kelim on the table. And as the Mefarshim point out, even if they're kelim, you're not even using to eat. But the impression that you're going to create by having nice kelim on the table is still worthwhile because of cheres. And the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, goes into a little more detail about that. And he uses the expression zecher lecheres. This is a way to commemorate the whole theme of cheres. In the Bira Gra, he has it a little bit differently to see how significant the difference is. But the Bira Gra in the Shulchan Aruch writes, this is Cheres. Whether that's so significant calling it a Zecher or the essence of Cheres, something we have to keep in mind. But Reb Chaim Brisker spoke about this. Reb Chaim in the stencils, right? That's level 2 of the canon. Right, the highest level of the canon for Chaim's Torah, so we have all kinds of different levels of credibility and stature and what makes it to the highest canon degree and the next level, so you have Iker Torah is Chidush Rabbeinu Chaim Halevi on the Rambam, right? That's the most canonized official Rav Chaim. Then level 2 is what's known as the stencils, which is the Chidush HaGrach Al Hashas, published in a informal looking way. It's called the stencils. So there you have a few very short comments from Reb Chaim, some longer comments. So here's a 2-paragraph comment from Reb Chaim about this. It's about this language of the Gra, that this is cheres, to have nice utensils on the table. So where does that come from? What does that got to do with anything? So he suggests, if you look back to our Mishnah, back on Sadi-Tes, so the Mishnah tells us that we need to have a seva. Right, and if you look at the Rashbam on the Mishnah, so what's the language? Ve'afilu ani should be Yisrael lo yochol. So the Rashbam fills in here, ba'arvei psachim ad she'esev kiderech b'nei chorin b'mita v'al ha'shulchan zecher l'cheres. So he adds in there that you should sit in a reclining way, like the kings do, on a bed kind of thing, by the table. So what's the focus there, that bed by the table specifically? So says Reb Chaim, that language seems to suggest that it's not just about how you are feeling. Right? You could say, all right, let me just go up to bed this Seder night and I'll be reclining. So specifically tied in to the table where the Seder is happening, that seems to be a part of the whole message of the Haseba here. So once you say it's a halacha in the table, so then other things could also be a halacha in the table. So to have nice kalim on the table is then in the spirit of Haseba also, and in the spirit of this whole notion of what we're looking for as far as the message of Cheres. Now, I think we still have to examine some parts of that and what exactly that means. And is there a significant impact of the Gra saying it's Cheres and not Zecher L'Cheres? On the surface, I could have thought that the Shulchan Aruch HaRav's language of Zecher L'Cheres would also be consistent with the display attached to the table. So it's not clear. You can take a look, Reb Chaim of the Stencils, what he means to bring out from that difference in language specifically. But that's his understanding, that at least Rashi's language brings us into a greater understanding of why the table is wrapped up in this. And therefore, it's not necessarily only about Haseba, it's about other things that convey Cheres as well. And that was a two-part question that maybe I think it was Ari who asked yesterday, right? That if we're looking at Haseba as a means to an end, that it's not necessarily that Haseba is the be-all and end-all, but that Haseba is a tool for Cheres, so then that could lead us to conclusions in two different directions. One, that other kinds of actions might equally accomplish what Haseba does, or at least alongside of it. And that issue that the Rav Yah and the Bach and others dealt with, that what if Haseba itself no longer fits into a message of Cheres? Again, whether that is because culturally all of us no longer relate to it that way, like what they were talking about, or whether it's because an individual may not be able to do Cheres in a way that connects to it, like the Tosfos seem to be reflecting, or whether it's any other issue, that also becomes something to consider. And we see that the Gemara, now on our Nudaf, on Kufches, so the Gemara tells us that there are certain types of Haseba that don't count. And, for example, Prakton is not called Haseba. So what exactly Prakton is a little bit of a discussion in the Rishonim. It's a discussion in the Rishonim over here. It's also a Gemara Maseches Brachos, where it comes up in a different context. But here, the Rashbam says, Prakton is Panav Klapei Maila, B'Shochev Al Achorav. The person is lying on his back and staring up into the stars. Tosfos over here disagrees. This doesn't seem to make sense. But one way or another, it's a exclusion from Haseva. That's not called Haseva. So the Levush and the Mishnah Berurah write that it's not Derech Eiris. That not all lying down is going to be Derech Eiris. There is a specific type of lying that is going to evoke that imagery of Cheres, and some other fashion is not necessarily going to line up with what it is we're trying to accomplish. Yaruch HaShulchan has a different emphasis. He writes that it's not Derech Kavod, it's just not a B'chavodik way to be, and that's where in the Gemara and Brachos talks about it in the context of Kriya Shema, brings it up as an issue there. So clearly, when the Gemara objects to this positioning, it's not only about Cheres, but about it being invoked specifically here, so it doesn't have a Haseba issue separate from whatever other issues it has. So that's where the Mishnah Berurah and the Levush come from, the question of to what extent is it a Cheres type of position, and that's a part of our consideration here also. Okay, so with all this, so then we go on to the question of how does this relate, this obligation of Haseba, to its individual mitzvahs? And that requires us to clarify a lot of things. First of all, what mitzvahs have Haseba? What mitzvahs don't? And where is in between? I think we left off on that point a little bit yesterday. And the question which very much connects to everything else, and again, I think this was a point that Ari introduced yesterday also, is to what extent is Haseba ma'akev, or is it not ma'akev? That if one fails to do Haseba in any of the details where it's required, so what impact does that have? Does it have an impact on that mitzvah specifically? Or is that mitzvah okay, but there's something lacking because of the Haseba requirements? Is Haseba an independent din? Or is it a din in the conditions of each mitzvah? And may it change from mitzvah to mitzvah? So where do we know that we definitely have Haseba as a requirement? We know matzah for sure. Right? That's what our Gemara tells us. Right? So that's the language of the opening part of this passage on Kuf Ches Amud Aleph. Matzah tzarech haseba. Now, matzah doesn't necessarily spell out everything we need to know. Right? Because as we'll see, so matzah has different iterations over the Seder. So are we talking about Al-Achilas Matzah? Are we talking about the Afikoman? Are we talking about both? So that still requires some analysis. Where does Korech fit in? And especially because then the Gemara goes on to say that Marur ain't Tzarech Haseba. So what's the impact of saying that Marur does not need? Is it optional? Is it bad? And so here, in some of the Rishon, we find the language that Marur specifically should not have Haseba. Not Ein Tzarech, just as the whole story. The Gemara's language of Ein Tzarech doesn't tell us everything. But we Davka not supposed to have Haseba by Matzah. Which, hi?
Marur.
By Marur, yes, thank you. You're paying attention. So, right, Vidavka not supposed to have a Haseba by Mar. So, could the whole emotional impact of Haseba, could it cut both ways? Right? Could the same way that it has a positive impact, maybe it also has a negative impact? Or, you could even ask the question, if you want to get very specific about it, to say that Mar should not have Haseba, what would the problem be? Is it a problem in Marur? Or is it a problem in Haseba, maybe? that maybe it's a contradiction to whatever Maror is supposed to accomplish to have Heseba at the same time. Or maybe it undermines the whole concept of your Heseba. That even when you're miserable, when you're having this bitter substance, still have Heseba? So what does your Heseba mean? So that's something we need to figure out. And when it comes to aspects of Haggadah and Berachas HaMazon, so there we find also a little bit of confusion and hollow. The Meiri, in his Chidushim, the Meiri actually says that when it comes to the Dalet Kosos, so we know Dalet Kosos has some kind of clear relationship with Haseva, that's what the next line of the Gemara is going to tell us. But the Meiri goes on to say that ideally the Haseva will not only be for the Dalet Kosos, but for everything that the Kosos are connected to. Right, which is a part of the question we posed about Dalet Kosos. Is Dalet Kosos, like the Brisker Rav posed it, a question of an obligation to drink wine? Or is it about reciting brachos alakos? So if it's really not just about the wine, but it's about how you are saying Haggadah, Hallel, benching, Kiddush, so then you could see a little bit where the Meiri is coming from. Right? That if we're saying Haseba should be associated with the Dalet Kosos, and the Dalet Kosos is really a way of saying Hallel, a way of saying Haggadah, then maybe you would extend it to that also. Now, that doesn't seem to be something that others support. And La Halacha, you can find many contraindications in the later Svarim that say specifically that Hallel should not be done Beheseba, that benching should not be done Beheseba. So all of this calls into question how much the Meiri is going to be accepted. The halacha calls into a very strong question, does not seem to be supported in Poskim. But the logic of it, maybe we could hear from two angles. Either because you want to say, like the Rambam's language, that Haseva is really just its own concept, and the Rambam has the idea that if you have Haseva throughout the meal, the Rama has that also, which doesn't extend it specifically to these mitzvos of Hallel and benching and the like, but the idea that Haseba is a general value, we did find that in the Rambam's language and the Ramah's language, so maybe it's just an extension of that. Or maybe even more pointedly, that if the Dalet Kosos are supposed to characterize those mitzvos, and Haseba is supposed to characterize Dalet Kosos, maybe you could hear where the Meiri is coming from. This question over here? Hi, Zach, yeah.
Well, we did see that there's a possibility that Seba doesn't apply to cups 3 and 4.
Right.
So then
that would be benching.
Or
we would break down from that point.
Yeah.
Right. It's a possibility, but we don't know for sure. We don't have a conclusion from Gemara how it is. Right. But it's theoretically a possibility that it only applies to the first two, in which case that would exclude Hallel and benching from that particular logic. Right. So that's also something to consider. How far does it make sense to extend this? And the details of those particular denim, each one which maybe has some kind of a counterindication, Hallel and Berachas HaMazon, because they require Ema in Yira, and they have to be recited in a respectful position, and Maror from a different direction, not necessarily about Ema, but about Marirus, and how is Haseba consistent with that? So all of that's also going to create a question mark for us. Ellie, did you have your hand up? Okay. So to focus for a moment on matzah. So what exactly is the impact of Haseba on matzah? So when the Gemara tells us about Haseba by Matzah and by the Dalet Kosos, so Tosfos raises the question of what would the impact be of not having one or the other. So Tosfos focuses it on the Dalet Kosos, right? Tosfos here, Kulu. So Kulu Nami Tzrichi Haseba. The whole Dalet Kosos Tzrichi Haseba Shas Shasiyah, right? Which also, some point out, seems to go against the Meiri, that when we're talking about the Dalet Kosos, specifically referring to the moment of drinking. So let's say you forgot, then you didn't. Should you go back and should you drink again? So it's going to be technically complicated also by the third cup, because that's going to create an interruption inappropriately between Kos 3 and Kos 4. So Tosfos here just raises this suffix without answering it. How much of an impact does Haseba have on the Dalet Kosos? And if you omit it when it's required, so what exactly is that going to mean for you? So practically speaking, we'll come back to that point. But the issue that Tosfos raises, so we saw that the Rush picks up on this in Siman Yud. Right, and how does the Rush come out? I'm sorry, Parakid Siman Chaf, our Parak, Siman Chaf. So how does the Rush come out? That Haseba is Ma'akev. That you do require Haseba. And the part of his approach is the language of the Gemara about matzah. So the extent to which matzah and Dalet Kosos are going to be the same for this is something that we have to figure out. But let's look at the Rush's language in the middle of Chaf. U'matzah bo yaseba b'kizayis rishon v'kizayis shel afikomen v'yem achal below haseba lo yotze. So when it comes to matzah, if you fail to have haseba, so then you are not yotze. K'da'amar Rishu ben Levi, why? Because the Gemara tells Rishu ben Levi says, Hashama sha'achal kizayis matzah kishu meisiv yotze. So if you have the attendant there at the meal, if he eats a kizayis matzah when he is in a reclining position, so then he's yotze. Mashma meisiv in lo meisiv lo. So it sounds like if he did haseba when he was eating good, if not, not. V'im ochel v'lo haseba yafzer v'yochel b'haseba. That if he failed to do haseba at the time that he ate the matzah, he's got to go back and do it again. So and then he goes on to apply this to Dalet Kosos. Now it's interesting on a lot of levels, because what do we want to do with that, this diuk of the Rush? Right, this is something that Reb Chaim also talks about in the stencils. And it's also a part of the Son de Briskarav and his discussion in his Sefer about the nature of Haseba. So, this statement of the Gemara that if you, the Shamish ate matzah with Haseba, he's Yotze, implying if not, not. So, what does that tell you about the relationship of Haseba and matzah? What do you think? Ari?
Perhaps they're going towards the same goal and value, and like the representation of symbolism of matzah and Haseba, so if you're lacking in one, you're lacking the holistic value of one or the other.
So that's very broad. That's saying you're saying that you have displayed yourself as a non-cheirus guy, and that impacts everything that you do that night. Which is interesting. That would be a pretty broad application. The way Reb Chaim and the Brisker Rav understood it is that this shows, this is a halacha in matzah, that the haseva is a condition in matzah, and that failing to do haseva disqualifies your mitzvah of matzah. Because if it's not a condition in matzah, it would be difficult to see it disqualifying the matzah. You'd say, all right, haseva you didn't do, but the matzah you still did do. So to say that you have to go back, it's no good. So it sounds like the haseva is a din in matzah. So the truth is, this is possibly a little bit more complicated, and we'll have to pick up with this tomorrow after we'll just recap. But just to explore the possibilities there. Is that the only way to read the Gemara, and is that the only way to read the Rush? When the Gemara says that the Shamish is Yotze if he ate it with his Seba, and the Rush says, okay, so you see, if not, then you have to go back and eat again with his Seba. So is the only way to read that, that his Seba is the din in matzah, and that's why it could disqualify your matzah by its absence? Ari?
You can rewrite that statement for the Gemara as qualifying the previous discussion when it's talking about like a Talmud Sol Rav.
Okay.
If you say that the obligation doesn't even exist when you're by your Rav or by your teacher, but
the obligation of Haseva.
But Hamash Malan, that the obligation still does exist, and it's not coming to teach us whether you fulfill the obligation if you haven't believed or not. It's just a totally different direction.
Okay, all right, so, but then what do you do with the fact that it says that if you ate the kazayas of matzah, you are yotze, what then?
Like the obligation still exists.
What obligation? For seba.
Yeah.
Right, so then I think what you're getting at is that it could be, that's just what the Gemara is looking at about the question of haseba, that maybe there is a obligation of haseba to some degree, and you can fulfill that minimally with your matzah. So if you got in a kezayis of matzah with haseva, you've done haseva. But if not, then there isn't really anything there to point to. And that even the Rush could mean that. Right? That even the Rush, when saying you're going to have to go back then and eat your matzah again, you might still be understanding that the matzah is the primary expression of haseva. And if you don't get at least that, you don't have haseva. And therefore, we'll make you do matzah again for the purposes of haseva. And that is indeed how some understand this differently than Reb Chaim. Now, the truth is, you have to say something along those lines. You have to acknowledge that there is something here that needs a little bit more explanation. Because if we're assuming that haseba is a din d'rabbanan, which seems most likely. So already we have to say that the mechanics are different for the dalakosos and for matzah. Dalakosos is a din d'rabbanan. So okay, Chazal set it up that way, even though they didn't make it so clear to us exactly how, and that left that suffix in the Gemara. But on some level, Chazal set it up in a way where haseba is a crucial part of at least some of the kosos. But in the case of matzah, this is a mitzvah minat Torah, so haseba, that's a din d'rabbanan, so it can't be that the mitzvah minat Torah is no good without haseba. Now, it happens to be, we've discussed a lot this year, partially because of the Masechta and partially because of the calendar, to what extent can Chazal step in and redefine a mitzvah even on the level of Minat Torah, right? We talked about if someone blew the shofar this past year, on Rosh Hashanah, which was also Shabbos, would they fulfill a mitzvah at all? And we spent some significant time on that question. So we saw there was something to talk about maybe the rabbis having the power to nullify a mitzvah even on a level of Minat Torah. But it's a chiddush, right? It wasn't at all clear that that could happen. And even if it does happen, it's not clear under what circumstances it happens. And Rav Asher Weiss talks about this a little bit in his Haggadah. So, for example, if one were to say that you blow shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, it's not a mitzvah at all, and that itself, we saw, was very controversial. But even if you took that position, okay, so there the rabbis made an actual isser. They were afraid of carrying on Shabbos, and they said, do not do this. So to say there's no mitzvah when you do it, that's one thing. To say that the mitzvah min haTorah of matzah is nullified because of a failure to do a chiyuv drabanan of heseba, it's a pretty big jump. You'd have to acknowledge that Chazal can do that, and that they wanted to do that here, which is a pretty big jump. So it's overwhelmingly likely that even if you assume we are talking about matzah, and that the rush means you're not yotzei matzah, that's why you got to go back and do it, we're still probably talking about a level midrabanan. That min haTorah, for sure you were yotzei. You accomplished whatever the Torah asked you to do as far as matzah. And midrabanan, the rabbi said, the same way they modified Kiddush every Friday night, that it's got to be al hakos by the table, and they modified benching and it has to have four brachos. And they modified other mitzvos. So too, they modified the mitzvah of matzah. Now, we're telling you it must be done behesev. But that's still going to be a din drabanan in and of itself, if that's the case. So then, that does affect the parameters of what we mean when we say that you've got to do this again. And whether that is part of the definition of matzah or just the expression of heseba, maybe is still open for a little bit more definition. So that will probably be something we'll have to pick up with tomorrow. Hopefully we'll get another big chunk done tomorrow. Just to quickly recap, what did we speak about? So we considered the question of to what extent is heseba about a internal reality or about something you are displaying. We saw that there is quite a discussion as far as nowadays we don't relate to Seba the same way, the Rav Yah that the Ramah quotes, and the Tshuva Sabach, and how that possibly impacts the Halacha, and the question of other expressions of Cheres that are not Seba, the Shulchan Aruch saying that we should have nice Kalim on the table. Apparently even Kalim that we're not even using is an expression of Cheres. Shulchan Aruch Harav's language of that's a zeichel cheres, and Levon Lagon's language of that is cheres. Rav Chaim and the stencils discussing how this ties into the Rashbam on the Mishnah, when the Rashbam says that we have to have heseva on the Shulchan, specifically the idea that it could be attached to the Shulchan, therefore also meaning it could be other things about the Shulchan as well. We talked a little bit about Prakton and about how why that wouldn't qualify as heseva. And that even though it's an issue elsewhere in Shas also, here associated specifically with Heseba, so the Levush and Mishnah Berurah is saying it's a lack in Cheres, and how exactly that impacts things. And then we went through some of the mitzvos in general the Seder night, about whether they are Heseba, optional Heseba, or Davka not Heseba, and the position of the Meiri, that which is associated with the Dalet Kosel should also have Heseba, and all of the indications differently and what exactly that could tell us. And then we zeroed in on this matzah discussion and Tosfos raising the suffix about Dalet Kosos and the Rush bringing it into the discussion of matzah and understanding from the Gemara that you're going to have to eat the matzah again without Haseba. And Reb Chaim's understanding that shows you that Haseba is a din in matzah. And we discussed, is there possibly a different way to look at that, especially in light of the fact that it's overwhelmingly likely that we're dealing with a din d'rabbanan, that we don't mean that the matzah is no good on level min haTorah, because that would be a double jump. We'd have to say that Chazal have that power, and that they used it even in a situation less dramatic than blowing shofar on Shabbos or something like that. And if we're dealing with a d'rabbanan, so then that already kind of recasts what we're talking about, to say the obligation mid-rabbanan is to eat the matzah again, which kind of puts it back into the court of whether it's about matzah or whether it's about heseva or about some combination. So, God willing, we will pick up with that tomorrow, give you some additional things to look at. should, so far the snow is still holding out, so you should continue to stay dry and stay safe and stay healthy. And I look forward to seeing you tomorrow morning.